Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
When marriage flourishes, so does society. When marriage decays, so does society.
If you have your heart set on a school that doesn't have a faithful church, then it's not the school for you if you're a Christian.
Transhumanism is saying the hope for humanity is to be found in humanity, in our ability to advance humanity, in our ability to change or to adapt and to develop ourselves. And so it eliminates the need for a savior.
Theology is not esoteric and theoretical. It's not a theology for the bookshelves, but that we have to roll up our sleeves and apply theology to daily life, even when that's not popular.
Teachers prepping for school in their silent, for now, classrooms love listening to Issues Etc.
We've all learned, well, we adults have learned, that on the internet there is danger, there's darkness just a click away or a scroll away. Our children have not yet learned this, but some of them are. And the people that are waiting for them there, the message that is waiting for them there is not good for them. There are transgender influencers out there who are more than happy to connect with your children, maybe not personally, but through their videos and their various social media presences. And they have a message for your kids, and they're delivering it to them. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, August the 10th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about social media, transgender activists, and children. Claire Morrell of the Ethics and Public Policy Center will be our guest. We'll spend some time going through your email and the Issues Etc. comment line. Then Dr. Jeff Boyle will join us of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. We will remember Patriarch Isaac from the Old Testament, and we'll discuss big tech censorship with Dr. Jennifer Oback Morse of the Ruth Institute. Joining us to discuss social media, transgender activists, and children, Claire Morrell. She's policy analyst at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, where she works on the Big Tech Project. She worked in the White House Counsel's Office and the Justice Department during the Trump administration. She's author of a column for The Federalist titled, Parents, If You Don't Get a Grip on Your Kids' Social Media, Trans Activists Will. Claire, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Why are transgender activists targeting young children?
It's a great question and one that I've continuing to try to answer myself. I mean, I think that the main thing is that they view this almost like the moral crusade, that they need to basically recruit youth and young children to understand and accept the validity and normalcy of their lifestyles. And they view themselves, I think, as on a crusade against heteronormativity. They think that is just such a danger to children to grow up thinking that there are two biological genders. And so it's really like their mission to recruit our children to accept their lifestyle. And I think on a deeper level that they, in their consciences, know that what they are doing is contrary to God's law, but they feel shame for that. And so to suppress their consciences, I think they want everyone to accept and embrace their lifestyle. And they realize that starting with children is the best way to kind of gain allies for their movement. And so I think it's a complicated question, but I do think there's a spiritual component. At a spiritual level, they are trying to suppress their consciences by getting everyone else to accept and embrace their lifestyle. And then on a more political level, I think that they really are on this kind of mission to convince everyone that heteronormativity is the greatest danger to us and we need to accept this kind of gender fluidity that they promote.
Your boss, Ryan Anderson, has referred to this impulse, this movement, as new Puritanism. What does he mean by that?
Yes, no, it's a great point that you bring up. I think that, and you know, I'm assuming this is what Ryan's talking about, is that they've become kind of puritanical about their own cause and their definition of what a man and a woman should be. And so they have this fervor to not just getting people to tolerate their lifestyles, but they must be affirmed and embraced and celebrated in every way. And so they really are on this kind of puritanical crusade to convince everyone that you can define your own gender, that it's not biologically defined. It is something that you can choose to identify as, to change your identity. And it's now it's not even choosing to be a trans woman or a trans man. It's this whole gender spectrum. Like, you can be anywhere on the spectrum. They're trying to completely make this a plastic fluid category, contrary to our biological given sexes. And so I do think what he means by that is that this is their religion. They are firmly convinced of this ideology, and it's not enough for us to just tolerate it. They're really out for everyone to accept and embrace and celebrate and affirm their movement.
So how are trans activists delivering this message to children?
Yeah, so I think that the main way that they're doing this is just by posting photos and videos of their lifestyle. And it's a very kind of relational format where they appear to try to say, like, hey, we're your friends, and this is how I transitioned, this is how great I feel. It's very kind of like a confessional type video. And they're trying to tell kids, if you have any doubt about your gender, well, then you're probably trans. Or if you've ever thought that you liked this kind of activity that's more maybe female activity or male activity, well, then you're probably trans. And then even more strange, they'll say things like, you know, you don't have to want to identify as the opposite gender to be trans. Trans is a spectrum. It's non-binary. I mean, they really kind of groom children to recruit them to their lifestyle. They tell them that they can try these hormones, these therapies, and it's the most amazing feeling. And so they're really kind of just, by talking about their own lifestyle choices and the kind of their own gender transition, they kind of just mark their stories. And they tell it in a way that I think is very relatable and approachable, particularly to young teenagers who are really in the throes of puberty and going through a ton of body changes and hormones are surging, to tell them that if they feel uncomfortable in their body or they don't feel confident in who they are, well, then they're probably trans. And that is the kind of malicious aspect of it, is they're preying on teens in these vulnerable years and using that to recruit them to the trans movement by telling them that the reason they probably feel uncomfortable is because they're the wrong gender, or they don't even have to be the wrong gender. They just, if they're uncomfortable, then they're probably trans. They can choose to be anywhere on the spectrum. And they also are actively undermining parents' authority by saying, if this is how you feel and your parents don't accept that about you, well, then they don't love you and come to us. And so they're really trying to replace parents' authority in children's lives to try to get children to join their cause and kind of become part of their quote unquote welcoming community. And so it's really dangerous, particularly because they're not being very forthcoming about all the dangers of the treatments and surgeries of the trans world. They just say, you can just start with testosterone and it'll feel amazing. And here's how to lie to your parents and your doctors in order to get it. So those are the types of things that they're doing.
How are social media especially powerful as the medium by which these messages are being delivered to children?
I think it's a powerful medium because they can really reach an audience anywhere. You know, it's not just people that they might talk to in real life in their communities. They know that by taking to these online platforms, they can reach out to children virtually anywhere in the world. And I think they've recognized, too, that the way the social media apps and algorithms are designed really help to promote their content. So if one person clicks on it and watches their video, and, you know, I happen to be friends with that teenager, well, then they're going to generate that video to my feed and say, you know, oh, because your friends watched it. And they don't say that, but that's what the algorithm's doing. We thought you might like this video. And so the social media apps are actually actively feeding and promoting content to kids. And if you watch just one of those videos that pops up in your feed, it can quickly send you down a rabbit hole of a bunch of other trans influencer videos, playing them one after another on YouTube or TikTok, just continues to generate these. And so I think that is why they recognize the power of social media, that if they can just get their videos and posts out there and get people to start liking them, then the app algorithms will help to continue to just elevate and promote that content, and knowing that they can just really reach an infinite audience, that this is where kids are these days because everyone's on it, and so they want to be part of what their peers are doing. But I think parents, unfortunately, don't understand that kids aren't just on there talking to their friends, but these apps are increasingly filled with the voices of outside strangers, people that they don't have real in-person relationships with, but complete strangers can reach children through these kind of online mediums and portray themselves to be their friends and their allies, even though they've never met them and don't have their best interests at heart. And so I think part of it is the design of the platforms themselves, and then just the fact that children are on these platforms makes it a place that they're targeting.
Give us some examples of how transgender predators have gotten to children through social media.
So I did kind of mention a couple of those already, just that they are able to basically just post their own videos and stories about their transitions or about what kids should think about if they feel uncomfortable in their bodies. And as I said, I think children are vulnerable. They're impressionable. They're trusting. And so if these are the voices that they are taking in, they're prone to believe them. And I think that is why the trans influencers are using these social media apps, is because they recognize they can kind of prey on that vulnerability of children to convince them from a young age that trans lifestyles are normal and valid. And so they believe that if they get to these kids when they're young, that will help them to accept these lifestyles. And so I can spout off like some of the top trans influencers, but I really don't recommend going and looking at their content. It's very disturbing. But you only have to go into Google and search top 10 trans influencers to just get tons of links to their Instagram accounts, their TikToks, their YouTube channels, where they just continue to put out their content. And so they're actively just really trying to coach kids. I gave some of those examples already, and telling them basically that if they are uncomfortable in their bodies and they've ever doubted their gender, then they are trans and they should start trying to get these treatments, and that will make them feel better. And so the main lie at the root of it is that if you're unhappy in any way or struggling in any way, which we know teens are going through so many changes and that they are, they're using that as a lure to say, well, then try these trans treatments or therapies and that will make you feel better. And you don't need to tell your parents, or here's the things to say to your parents in order to go get access to those, or here's how to order these things online and get them and, you know, have it look like it's something innocent to your parents, but actually it's this transgender tool. Those are just some examples of the things that they're trying to tell kids.
Claire Morell is our guest. We're talking about social media, transgender activists, and children. How can parents protect their children from transgender predators online? We'll answer that question next.
In making its decisions, the government shouldn't do so with an eye toward helping one religious sect or another. It should be neutral, and it shouldn't muck about in the affairs of the religious realm.
Former Attorney General Bill Barr speaking at the 2022 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
Their brand of secularism is really about destroying and subsuming the religious sphere altogether. And that's what I say the threat today is not that religious people are out to establish a theocracy in the United States. It is that militant secularists are trying to establish an atheocracy.
You can watch and listen to a recording of Bill Barr making the case against the progressive assault on the U.S. Constitution from this year's Making the Case conference. It's available in both video and audio formats for a tax-deductible contribution of $300. Learn more at issuesetc.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Memoria Press exists to promote and impart the classical heritage of the Christian West through an emphasis on the liberal arts and the great works of the Western tradition. The Memoria Press curriculum encourages the development of wisdom and virtue through the pursuit of truth, goodness, and beauty. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR22. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time. MemoriaPress.com.
We're discussing social media trans activists and children with Claire Morrell of the Ethics and Public Policy Center. I'm Todd Wilkin. You're connected to Issues Etc. Ad Crusum has produced posters for your homeschool and Christian day school of the Apostles' Creed, the Lord's Prayer, the Ten Commandments, the church year calendar, and more. Check them out at adcrusum.com, adcrucem.com. Claire, how can parents protect their children from transgender predators online?
Yes, that's really the root question and why I wrote my article. The best thing that parents can do is to delay social media use as long as possible. I think that's the primary place where they're reaching out to kids. And so I would just really encourage parents to keep their children off these platforms until adulthood. So 18 ideally, but even 16 is better than these even younger ages when they're more vulnerable. And I would say particularly the worst apps are TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. And so I would highly recommend parents keep their children off of those platforms. If you do decide to allow your kids to have these apps for whatever reason, definitely set them to the strongest privacy settings possible. And I would just say, as your parent, you have the right to monitor their use. So I would encourage parents, if they are allowing that, to only allow kids on these platforms in, you know, a common space in your home, on a public computer where you can monitor what they're doing and see what they're seeing. And so I think keeping screens and devices out of kids' bedrooms and keeping any devices in your home password protected, with only the parents knowing the password, so that if the children are accessing the internet, they're doing so with the parents' permission, and then the ability for the parent to then observe and be around in terms of what they're doing. And then I would also just say, I don't think that children should really have smartphones again until later in their teen years, because the smartphone just provides this kind of constant access to a lot of these apps. It's just the temptation is really too powerful for children, and smartphones are just much harder for the parents to monitor precisely what they're doing. You can often set up parental control softwares, but there are ways to get around those. And I think, as we probably realize, young children are very adept at figuring out technology. And so just to try to have the tightest control possible for parents, I would really recommend, again, delaying social media as long as possible, as well as smartphones. And then anytime they are accessing the internet, they're doing so in a way that they can be supervised, as well as considering, you know, buying tools on top of that, that are parental control softwares, that you can even shut down access to certain websites or apps or things like that, is also helpful. But tools are by no means a silver bullet. It will take a lot of intentionality and proactivity on the part of parents to monitor kids. But there are tools and softwares out there at pretty minimal cost to help parents in this as well. And we recommend and kind of outline all the things that I just discussed in a guide on our website. So eppc.org, if you click on the Big Tech Project page, you will find a PDF that you can view and download that has our new Parents Guide to Technology. So that is full of more specifics if parents want to look for further information.
So how do you respond to someone who says that this threat is overblown and that your recommendations are extreme?
Yes, I do think that a lot of parents will think that what I'm saying does sound extreme, just because the pressure that they get from their kids is, well, mom and dad, everyone's on these apps. And I would just say that that is a challenge that parents will face, having to fight those individual battles with their children, but it is worth it for the sake of your child's soul. The platforms themselves are not trying to protect our kids. And unfortunately, until Congress passes better legislation to protect kids online from a lot of these harms, it really is on parents, and they're on the front lines. And so I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but I do think that parents should realize that the threats are very serious, and that even a short amount of time on the wrong apps listening to the wrong voices can be extremely dangerous. And so screen time limits really aren't sufficient, which is why I was recommending the stronger measures of delaying social media as long as possible, not allowing smartphones, et cetera, because these voices are dangerous and they are not taking your child's best interests at heart the way that you are as their parent. And so I would just say these childhood and teen years are very impressionable. Children's prefrontal cortexes are not fully matured and developed the way adults are. And so I think a lot of times adults think they can use social media wisely so their kids can too, but they don't have a fully developed brain with the impulse control and emotional control that adults have. And so they're very vulnerable to the way that these social media apps are designed to addict them, and then these outside voices to really lure them to believe the lies that they are feeding our children. And so I don't think that the threats are overblown. And I think that extreme measures really are needed in this day and age to protect our kids. And I would just say, if you're a parent, don't be afraid to be the first one in your group of kids' friends to take these steps and talk to the other parents. I think if we can inspire a movement among parents to keep our kids off, that it makes it then easier on each individual parent to have that conversation with their child. And so really talk to your friends and talk about these risks and these threats and try to make a pact together to keep your kids off these platforms, because the more that their friends aren't on them, then the easier it is on an individual level as a parent to say no to your own child. And so I think that the more that parents can really unite to protect their kids, that will help in terms of the difficulty of navigating those conversations with your own child.
Claire Morrell is policy analyst at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, where she works on the Big Tech Project. She worked in the White House Counsel's Office and the Justice Department during the Trump administration. She's author of a column for The Federalist titled Parents, If You Don't Get a Grip on Your Kids' Social Media, Trans Activists Will. You'll find a link to this column and to the Ethics and Public Policy Center at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Claire, thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Up next, it's listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. Stay tuned. Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. consistently ranks among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.
Truth, freedom, and vocation are the pillars of a Concordia University Chicago education. Through them, we form our students for lives of influence and service for the common good. This is the education American society needs right now. I'm Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia Chicago, and I invite you to visit us to discover what it means for truth, freedom, and vocation to become the pillars of your future. Learn more at cuchicago.edu.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
All four gospel writers tell the story of Jesus' baptism in slightly different ways, in slightly unique ways. Does this mean, then, that there are contradictions in the accounts of Jesus' baptism? Certainly not. But if you've ever had this question or others related to it or about other stories of the Bible, you should pick up a copy of the August issue of the Lutheran Witness, Breathed Out by God, where we talk about these seeming contradictions of Scripture. To get your copy, visit cph.org/witness or our website, witness.lcms.org, to learn more. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Do you know any military veterans in your church or community? Do you have a passion to support and reach them with the gospel of Jesus Christ? Then Operation Barnabas is for you. Called by Christ's love, Operation Barnabas engages, empowers, and equips LCMS faith communities to provide hope, healing, and support to military-connected persons living in their community. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces.